Well, hello out there to my friends in radio and virtual listening land. Adam Lepp here on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio. Thank you for lending an ear, a brain cell, and most importantly, a funny bone or two, because when I enter the microphone, you know there's going to be a giggle or two. Just witness my recent show with Scott E. Spears, the interviewer to the stars. Today we have a person who's a bit of a star in his own right, although he does sometimes interview or otherwise interact with people much more important than yours truly, Dr. Ronald L. Feynman, where some people might say that L stands for liberal, but I would say it stands for lots of great knowledge and presidentology and interesting points and factoids to ponder. Now, since we talked last, Ron, there's been a lot of news, and I could sit here and talk really fast and maybe cover every possible story in the last...
Oh, my God, how much has occurred just in this past week, yeah.
In the last 2 weeks, and I'm sure we'll only cover 0.1% of what we were planning on covering, but that's okay. We'll get to a mixture of stories, some little humorous, some kind of serious, some controversial, some we agree on, some we don't, and never quite know. Ron is the author of the blog, which he writes to just about every day. He did take a well-deserved two-week vacation recently, but he's back in action, theprogressiveprofessor.com. You don't need to subscribe, pay on Apple Pay, slide your credit card through your phone. You can visit that website anytime from any internet-enabled device, free of charge. Let me give myself a little pat in the back. I've given Ron some tech support on it recently, so if you've noticed that it works a little better than it ever has... Well,
yes, it does.
You can thank a radio host near you, but that's cool. We want Ron to disseminate the information. As the title might imply, and as I kind of implied, it tends to be slanted toward the left. But many of the articles are just about history and thoughts, not really a political perspective, although nowadays it's hard not to inject some of your politics into whatever you might write or talk about or what have you. Of course, Ron, it kind of depends what you want to think of as the most recent, the biggest, that's the fun of live radio. If you mess up, you can make fun of yourself. So the biggest recent event, many of which were very sad, the school shooting certainly coming to mind. But let's, say, start on a lighter note. And it's a serious story, but with this guy, you know, anything really is turned into humor. And, of course, that would be the booking, fingerprinting, and essentially what was an arrest of the first time, except for the...
An indictment.
Except for that horse and carriage incident we talked about recently. This, a
serious,
Grant, possibly jail-deserving charge, or prison charge, possibly, of Mr. Donald J. Trump, who was the same Donald J. Trump who was president of the United States not long ago, host of the TV shows and... Trump Tower and all kinds of other stuff that guy gets into. He certainly is a character. Whether or not you like him, you certainly can recognize that he stimulates people's interest in pop culture, in history, who knows, whatever else. I imagine, Ron, like myself, you watched the arrest and the commentary of Mr.
Yes.
Donald J. Trump, and I'm not sure what to say. Tell us what you think. I'm sure you have your opinion, so please spew forth said opinion to our beloved audience.
Well, the thing that disturbs me is his attacks on the prosecutor and on the judge. That's not the way when people are arrested that you're supposed to do things. That is provoking controversy and possible retribution against those people doing their job. So it's very alarming, and that's why I say if he doesn't stop his attacks, he needs to be incarcerated because he's going beyond the pale. You can't do that when you're a defendant. You can't do that. And yet he has no ability to limit his behavior. He's really got mental issues, it's clear. And I'm just concerned that there's going to be violence because of the trial coming up and also the future trials because the other issues in Georgia and in D.C. and in New York, the state of New York, and also the E. Jean Carroll case, he's going to be in court a lot now, our 45th president. So his behavior is going to become something that incites a lot of trouble.
You know, interesting topic, Ron, and we talk about this from time to time, is the post-presidency of past presidents.
That'd be like good, Jimmy Carter, 42 years.
Yeah,
yes.
good sobriety test there. And many of the past presidents have led fairly quiet life. recently, George Bush, number one, passed away shortly after his wife, Barbara Bush, had passed away. And his life was
2018.
Was fairly quiet post-presidency. And his son, another President Bush, George W. Bush, hear from him occasionally, but he certainly hasn't been overly active. In fact, I couldn't even really tell you what he's doing right now. But I'm sure he's enjoying his retirement and probably enjoying the fact that he's not embroiled in all the controversy, that he has a nice quiet life with his lovely wife, Laura. And
you may intervene with George W. Bush. He's quite a good painter, I think, as a non-expert. And also, he likes to give chocolates to Michelle Obama when he sees her.
Right, but not a totally active post-presidency. Of course,
no.
Donald Trump's post-presidency has only been as such for just over 2 years, and maybe it's not things that he would like to be involved in, but it's been a pretty busy post-presidency. Obama, early 60s, I believe, you know, still relatively young. I think he's pretty much done with politics. The rumors of his wife, Michelle, going into politics, who knows? I think she'd be a great politician, but I really think she likes to stay out of the, I'd say out of the limelight, but I think more out of the aggravation.
Yes,
you do hear
I
from
agree.
Obama. He certainly yeah. spews forth his opinions. He's active on social media. But again, he certainly seems that he's at least semi-retired, but who knows what may occur. As again, he's relatively young, or early 60s for someone who was a post-president, considering the current president just had his 80th birthday. Mentioned Jimmy Carter in hospice care currently.
98 and 6 months as of April 1.
He's been an elder statesman, and I can't say I was a big fan of his presidency, but as a man, yeah, got to love the guy. Down to earth, who really cared about people, and I always loved his family, as I mentioned, Amy Carter, his wife,
yes.
his mother, and most importantly, Billy, my favorite presidential family member of all time. So, you know, colorful
yeah,
family.
He was.
A good man, and you know, post-presidency, that's lasted two generations. But Donald Trump, Ron, notwithstanding that he wants to be president again, like Grover Cleveland, to non-consecutive terms, has had a very active post-presidency. And do you think, when all is said and done, he might be considered the president with the most active post-presidency? Not necessarily good things, but do you think he will be remembered as the person who was most, maybe out of lack of a better term, notorious after he left the Oval Office?
Well, notorious, yes, but it's only been 2 years, so it's hard to compare him to presidents who have been out longer. I tend to think that if he either is knocked out of the race or he doesn't win in 2024, that we will not hear from him after that. So I don't think he'll be. Huh. He's just active in trying to get back. That's all. I don't see him as active in any positive way. You know?
That wasn't quite what I was expecting, but yeah, you're the expert, and you really don't know. And again, he might
yeah.
consider himself a vibrant young man, but he is well in his 70s. So maybe it's time to hang up his political end of his life and enjoy life with his lovely wife Melania, his son Barron, his other oftentimes colorful family members. I would think prior to this post-presidency, certainly when it comes to embroiled in controversy, we had Tricky Dicky, Richard Milhouse Nixon, and William Jefferson Clinton, or Bill Clinton. Again, post-presidencies that have not been overly positive. I think the Bill Clinton stuff has calmed down, and part of it also was his wife Hillary with her political aspirations. But Richard Nixon, the controversial pardon by Gerald Ford, and then he kind of quieted down a bit and lived his life out in retirement. Would you say, though, Ron, maybe in at least in my lifetime, let's say since the mid 60s, let's just put a approximate date, that prior to Donald J. Trump, the most controversial post-presidencies were Bill Clinton and Richard Nixon? Would that be a logical statement?
Yes, I would say that. Absolutely,
okay.
Yes.
And
yeah.
We're not quite sure where they'll rank, but certainly post-presidency things have certainly come up. And we have Kennedy, who was assassinated just before my birth. Let's just put it that way. So he's been in your lifetime, Ron. It's come that he was a great president, glamorous, with a beautiful wife and family. He was young, our first at least openly Catholic president, great speaker, but it's come to pass, especially with some of the controversies of Bill Clinton or even Donald Trump, that he might not have been quite, let's say, the gentleman that people have thought, specifically not necessarily being faithful to his wife, Jackie. Has his image, you think, been tarnished at all, or is he still thought of as really, despite the short term, one of our best presidents in recent history?
Well, as far as experts, they put him usually at number 8 now among the presidents. He slipped a bit from number 6. But I actually tell students, I think he's overrated. I think Nixon's underrated, not saying he's up in Kennedy's level, but I think Nixon is underrated. He actually did quite a bit of a comp that's quite good. And Kennedy, I think, is overrated a lot because, I think, of his assassination and because of the Cuban Missile Crisis. But I always say the Cuban Missile Crisis wouldn't have occurred if the Bay of Pigs invasion had been successful 18 months earlier. So I think Kennedy is a bit overrated, but he's glamorous, and of course his death is a tragedy. Nixon, I think, because of Watergate, he's knocked down, but he actually has quite a few accomplishments in both domestic and foreign policy.
Speaking with Dr. Ron Fineman, our official presidentologist and political commentator, here on The Talking Place with me, Adam Lepp, the computer guy, host of Mid-Morning Coffee Break, frequent caller to the Scott Spears Show, and whatever else may tickle my fancy. That's kind of ironic, Ron. We know that party platforms have changed. I'm sure you knew I was going to say this. We have Tricky Dickey, Republican, and you're saying that he's better than advertised. And yes, he's a foreign policy wizard, certainly an environmentalist, starting the EPA, which we agree is a very important organization. Now, there is some sentimental value there. My dad worked for the Ohio EPA for quite a while, so you know I'm an EPA kind of a guy.
and my son is, of course, involved with the conservation.
Yes, your son's done environmental work. So, Tricky Dicky, higher than people might think, and John F. Kennedy, lower than people might think. And that
but not lower overall to Nixon, because Nixon's negatives are too much.
And
he's overrated a bit. Yeah.
You being a Democrat, but I think we can agree the parties have really diverged at one time. Let's say when I was young, you know, from your earlier, I would say after maybe Roosevelt, there wasn't a tremendous difference in Republican and Democratic parties. Now it seems like they're constantly at each other's throats. With me, my beliefs, some far left, some far right, although most I consider to be nonpartisan because, you know, I don't believe in political parties anyway. Independent, you know, leaning libertarian, which I think quite a few people have. It just seems a shame that you have to say I belong to this one party. I have to believe this, this, and this. That doesn't seem right to me because my beliefs can be all over the place. And to me, they're consistent, but that's what makes America great is our diversity of opinion and viewpoints.
I wanted to mention the 60s and 70s, the Republican Party had a lot of liberal and moderate members. No longer does. So, but it was more with both parties, you know, able to work together much better.
And Bill and Hillary Clinton seem awfully conservative economically. They do not seem to have the economic policies of, let's say, our last two Democratic presidents.
I tell students Bill Clinton's the most, quote, conservative, not necessarily meaning like Republicans today, but the most conservative and, quote, Democratic president since Grover Cleveland. I think he was.
I would agree.
More than Will.
I guess FDR, being a Southern Democrat, that might be part of it.
Even more than Carter. He went along with a lot of Republican ideas, but they still impeached him. And then they complained about his sex life, but they don't care about Trump's sex life.
Yes, well,
double standard, like everything, hypocrisy.
There's a lot of hypocrisy on both sides, as I say, you know, out of lack of a better way, the nut jobs are on both sides, and that's why I kind of make my own opinions, and I think in some way, Ron, we do agree with that, is there are Republicans that you like, at least as people, Ben Sasse being an example.
Well, he's no longer in Congress. He's the head of the University of Florida now.
Correct, yeah, so but when he was in Congress, and just his general viewpoints. I mean, he's a PhD, a professor like yourself, but at least as a man, you do find admirable qualities with him. You used to find admirable qualities with Nikki Haley, but I understand she has certainly diverged since then. But at one time, I realized that.
Yeah, but Lisa Murkowski of Alaska is someone I always admire still.
Up there in Alaska.
Senator Murkowski of Alaska.
Yeah. She's certainly fairly moderate. And you know, Jeb Bush, your former governor, you've said good things about him. Bushes in general are fairly moderate. It seems like it's so different from what we have right now. We have kind of extremism, and that goes for both sides. Yeah. You know, I would say it's the Democrats that are more extreme. You might disagree with that, but the bottom line is we are having a tremendous polar opposite issue here, and it'd be nice if we could all just get along.
The parties.
And maybe that'll happen at one time. So people have said, Ron, this arrest of Donald Trump, it'll take years and years to drag on. He won't go to prison. They'll plea bargain. They'll drop it. Do you have a crystal ball? What do you think? You know, let's say it's 2026 or so. Does your crystal ball say, was Donald Trump still a free man? Is he sitting in an orange jumpsuit to match his orange hair in a prison cell somewhere? What do you think will happen with him 3 years down the road, or is it just too early at this point to
judge? Yeah, I think that if it comes to the point where he has to go to prison, he probably will pass away from the aggravation, because he's an old man and he's overweight, so I'm not sure he's going to live that long. I think he's got too much stress as it is now, and with more cases coming up, it could undermine his health.
Is there really a possibility that he will be wearing the orange jumpsuit, be behind bars? Is that a possibility? It just seems unfathomable. Now, we've had a lot of governors.
It's hard to imagine. Yeah. Hard to imagine, but we've had senators and governors who have
many, like Illinois governors, and Blagojevich.
Yeah, like Rob Blagojevich. Rob Blagojevich went to prison, yes.
You know, Illinois.
A lot of people from, a lot of Illinois and New Jersey governors have been in prison.
Illinois itself.
They're the states with the most cases,
Mostly a rural kind of a state, but Chicago, third largest city in the country, second largest in the Midwest. So we think of the state containing Chicago and then the governor with a lot of publicity. I mean, Blagojevich, I think, and Trump, pretty similar. They like the camera. They like the talk. And maybe they ran their mouth too much. They were, you know, colorful characters, to say the least.
Trump pardoned Blagojevich also. He gave pardons to all the people that were convicted politicians.
But when he's not president anymore, he can no longer pardon. That's why we were talking he could pardon himself while he was still president. But he can't be.
That is not likely. I don't think you could pardon yourself, but he didn't try, because I think Nixon looked into that and was told you cannot pardon yourself. No.
Yeah, I think self-pardoning, I don't think it should be allowed, but who knows? I don't claim to be the expert. I favored foreign languages, math and science, and more than I did history in school, and maybe I should have reconsidered. You know, as I said, in my adulthood, I wish I would have paid more attention to history, because it is fascinating. But granted, I think history is more exciting now. I mean, I did go to school during the Nixon and Ford presidencies, and I follow current events. I mean, my dad watched the Watergate stuff every night. He read about it. He just he was totally engrossed in what was going on, but he was working in government, so that was part of it. And so I certainly followed that too. But with all that's going on currently in history, how we compare it to previous presidents and previous events in the United States, you really can't help but get involved and spew forth your opinion. As I've said, it's a good time for radio talk show hosts, not to mention gossip magazines and who knows whatever else.
Yes.
So I guess in some ways it's an exciting time to be alive, to be an American. Every time you wake up, who knows what's going to occur. But bottom line is, Ron, there is a distinct possibility Donald Trump will be convicted and he will go to prison. That certainly could happen, theoretically.
It could. It's just hard to think that far ahead. But I don't think so much on this case. I think more on the January 6th insurrection and on the Mar-a-Lago documents. You know, I think it's more dangerous than the others.
Yeah,
I
mean,
and also the Georgia case.
Right. There's been a lot coming up with Mr. Bragg, the DA, who has prosecuted Trump. And I think you've heard this, Ron. He said he ran on the platform, among other things, that he would get Donald Trump. He doesn't like Donald Trump, and if he gets elected as DA, he will do his best to send Donald Trump's rear end to a courtroom and get convicted. And you've heard that.
Yeah, well, conviction's harder than indictment, though. That's the only thing. It's not going to be easy for a person like Trump to get a conviction.
You feel he's being biased?
Needs one juror.
Yeah. He's being too zealous that he just hates Donald Trump. I mean, he doesn't like Donald Trump. That's fine. That's his right, and I respect that. But is he being overzealous because of his extreme dislike for Mr. Trump? Is it reasonable what he's doing?
Well, I think the case is, compared to the other cases that are coming up, weakest. And that's the thing I'm worried about, that it's going to make people not take seriously the more you know, the cases that are much more significant. So I am concerned about that. I don't know if this is not the biggest deal. The other things are much more serious charges, the other cases. So that is worrisome.
Well, yeah. The people getting rich will be lawyers. I think we can agree on that one.
Oh, my God. Lawyers are liars. That's the old saying.
Yeah,
oh, my
lawyers
gosh.
And talk These show hosts will be busy, him. That's for sure. Scott Spears has had Andrew Wyatt, Sam Donaldson on twice. Multiple commentators, Judge Joe Brown, to talk about this and other news stories. So if you're in the radio talk business, if you're a spewer, forther of opinion, well, you're living the right time in history, ain't you? So Ron Feynman here with me on WWGH Radio. Thank you, folks, for listening. A lively and fun discussion, as usual. Let's turn to another recent event, Ron, the Tennessee incident. And I'll let you know, I don't know specifically what happened because every news outlet I read gives me a different story. And, of course, social media, it's an entirely different ball of wax altogether. What exactly happened in Tennessee and what are the after effects of this?
Okay, well, there were the murders of those 3 9-year-olds and the 3 school personnel at the Christian school in Nashville. And yet the Tennessee legislature made it clear they're not going to do anything about strengthening gun laws in any sense. And there were demonstrations by students at all ages, college and elementary, middle and high school at the legislature. And some members of the legislature joined in, the Democratic members, including one woman and 2 African-American lawmakers. And because of their participation in the demonstrations, there was a vote to expel the 2 black members, while the woman was saved by 1 vote short of being expelled. And she herself said it was a racist thing. And it reminded us that it is Tennessee where the Ku Klux Klan began, and Tennessee is one of the most right-wing and racist states in the way it's conducted itself on civil rights. And it's alarming and very, very disturbing, and it's made those 3 people, the Tennessee 3, famous, not that they want it. But it's really a disgraceful situation what happened there, because after what happened in Nashville at that school, action should be taken, and they have no concern, no interest in doing that, the Republicans who dominate the legislature.
So they were expelled from the legislature. Is there any other explanation, Ron, besides blatant racism? It seems this is 2023. I understand.
Well, they were rude and crude, they would say. They were rude and crude. They used bullhorns. And they talked out of turn, you know, that kind of thing. So, I mean, I can see that someone could give them a reprimand for their behavior, but to expel them with only 3 people, I think, have ever been expelled from the Tennessee legislature for sex scandals or for some kind of corruption. This is not corruption. This was was overreach on the part of the Republican majority to do that. And they didn't do it for the white woman who was, you know, almost did, but they saved her. So she herself said, this obviously is a race thing. Why wasn't I removed as well? And it's just Tennessee, it's this old state of Al Gore. Oh, my God, how fast and horrible Tennessee has fallen from the past days when Tennessee was a bipartisan state. Now it's all one-sided extremism, and it's very bad and very dangerous for the reputation. It's going to undermine the state of Tennessee and Nashville. And Nashville was a possibility for the Republican National Convention, and the city of Nashville, which is run by Democrats, said no. So now they're going to take away their control of the airport and of the convention center, the state legislature. That, you know, it's become a real wrestling match between both parties, and Nashville and Tennessee are going to suffer for it.
So what you're saying is these lawmakers did wrong, but the punishment should fit the crime. That's basically what you're saying.
Well, technically, they were out of order, yes. But still, the fact is that, you know, that to be expelled over that, reprimanded is one thing, censured over it. You don't expel people over something like that. We did that. Half of Congress would be expelled, not counting the half of them on the Republican side who were involved in the insurrection, indirectly or directly. I mean, Jim Jordan should not be in Congress based on his behavior, but he is, because you don't expel people that way, and the state legislature should not be doing that either. And they never have in the past. Just 3 people, the whole history of the state, have been expelled, and not for cases like this.
Do you see these people as being reinstated? As I said, the punishment should fit the crime. That's the thing, is it's way too extreme.
Yeah, they'll be reinstated, but also the legislature could vote not to let them be reinstated. That's a possibility, too, where they will not allow them to come back. We don't know yet. It's in limbo.
So we're still seeing what's going to happen. The school shooting tragedy, Ron. I don't know what to say. It's horrible, and it seems like we're talking about this more and more. And you know, we are both in favor of people's right to bear arms. It's what arms can they bear, and how can they use them? How can they be trained to use them? Besides shock and sadness, do you have any thoughts about the school shooting in Tennessee?
Well, one thing is I have to commend the Tennessee or Nashville police for going into the scene and saving lives. Like, six people were killed, but they did so much more than the Uvalde, Texas police who did nothing and sat back for more than an hour as they had a whole slew of kids and adults killed. So I commend the Nashville police, but it's clear that a lot of these cases are in the South. And they just don't care about any kind of regulation of AR-15s. We're not talking about handguns. We're saying you don't need weapons of war to be loosely allowed to be purchased and to have and to take away any kind of regulation of them. And yet that's what's going on. And these are states that say they're pro-life on abortion, and yet they're not pro-life on guns in the sense of realizing how many children and people are killed by guns, and a lot of them AR-15s, not just ordinary handguns. So it's hypocrisy, to say the least.
So you and I would mostly be in agreement. We are in favor of people's right to bear arms. I mean, Ohio is a big hunting state. People should be allowed to have a gun for protection. But these automatic and semi-automatic weapons, there's either no place for them or they should be heavily regulated. And people should be trained.
They're war machines. We're not having war. You're not supposed to be killing people with war machines, you know.
I mean, gun control is a sensitive topic and one that I've wavered a bit. Even day to day, I may change my mind. People have a right to protect themselves, but weapons need to be used responsibly. And you know, responsibly, when it comes to weapons, that's a very slippery slope, to say the least. But certainly, these school shootings are very tragic and very saddened. Kind of at a loss for words here. Let's hope we can get along, even if we have differences, and be good to one another. It really does work wonders, doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
Adam here with Dr. Ron Feinman on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio, talking about some of the recent news events. And Ron is the author of the blog, theprogressiveprofessor.com, where he talks about news stories, history, and sometimes injects a bit of left-sided politics, but not necessarily. During Passover and on Easter Sunday, 4/9 of 23, you wrote a rather long blog. Normally it's just two or three paragraphs, but this was a big one. Crazy, tumultuous America, 158 years after the end of the Civil War. So 4/9/23, 158 years after the Civil War, and you're postulating that America is arguably more divided than it ever has been, including the tumultuous 1960s. We've kind of touched on some of these issues earlier in the show, but why do you feel that? I mean, the 60s, you know, I was born then, my sister was born then. So you were, I guess, finishing up your college, a young man back then.
And going to graduate school, yes.
Yeah, definitely was tumultuous. And why do you feel that way? Have we gone backwards, or what is your assessment?
Well, as I say in this entry, we're taking away women's right to choose, to control their own body. Now with this recent decision of this district court judge to suspend a particular abortion drug, and, you know, it could end all abortions of anybody being able to get it. And I say it's not the business of government to interfere with a woman's right to choose. So as I say, I mean, this is a country that didn't make women equal to men for a long time. They didn't even give them the right to vote until 1920. And yet we have a situation in which they're stripping away a woman's right to control herself and decide whether she will have children. And basically, every time a woman engages now in future with sexual intercourse by choice or by force, you know, she could obviously become a victim. Because, you know, if they say teenage boys and older men, they're going to take advantage, and we're going to have women being forced to have children that in many cases they should not have to have. It's just not right. And then, of course, I talked about Donald Trump, how he's abused power and damaged the Republican brand of Eisenhower, Theodore Roosevelt, and Abraham Lincoln. And then, of course, the whole issue of anti-immigrant feelings and how we're still having lots of troubles for people of different immigrant backgrounds, and also freedom of religion. We're now having a movement toward white supremacy Christianity in this country, a national theology, and that's not our Constitution. There's a lot of things going wrong in this country, and I'm very worried about the future.
We appreciate your words there, Ron. It's a tumultuous time, out of lack of a better term. And on your blog, yeah, from April 7th of 23, again, theprogressiveprofessor.com, I encourage my listeners to read it, bookmark it, favorite it, your brain, and sometimes your funny bone will thank you post-reading. We talked about the Kennedys earlier. It's, I think, like the Bushes, we agree, is if there's ever a royal family in the United States, certainly the Kennedys would be up there. Robert F. Kennedy, his namesake son, a disgrace to the family name. So Robert F. Kennedy Jr., tell us about this gentleman.
Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is a conspiracy theorist. He's backed by Steve Bannon, who, of course, works with Trump. He's cavorted with right-wing extremists. And, of course, his own family divides around him. His mother, Ethel, the widow of Robert Kennedy, is still around. She's 95, I guess, I think a couple of days from now. And, I mean, he's first of all, and I know you and I disagree on this, on the vaccine, but he's an anti-vaccine conspiracy theorist, you know, which I think goes too far. He's attacked Dr. Fauci, who's now retired, and, you know, and of course he has a right to, but, I mean, I think it's wrong that he's doing it. But the point is that he's become someone who now has decided somehow, because of his name, he's going to challenge Joe Biden for the nomination. He's not going to go anywhere. He's not going to get anywhere because his own family is divided around him, and he comes across, not, you know, over many years, his behavior. He also has drug and alcohol problems. He's a lunatic. And, you know, he's got a name, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. But honestly, I think he's damaging the Kennedy name, and I don't know how he even keeps his wife, Cheryl Hines, who's a decent lady. I don't know. I mean, this is just crazy. But then Marianne Williamson, another person who ran in 2020, was also a lunatic, as announced. So at this point, Joe Biden has two lunatics running against him. They're not going anywhere. And it's just that it's an embarrassment that even going to be on the Democratic ballot in the primaries. But I guess they will be. But RFK has been consorting with people like Steve Bannon, who's a Trump supporter. So to me, it's a disgrace. You know?
What I'm kind of fascinated by, Ron, and you are too, I'm sure, is that he is a Democrat. We've talked about the Democrats in general being far left, Republicans far right. Is he a Democrat mainly because the family is a bunch of Democrats? What's the deal with that? He doesn't really sound like a Democrat to me. He almost sounds a bit libertarian, like myself. I'm not saying I agree with him on all issues. Certainly, as you mentioned, the COVID stuff and the Fauci stuff, 100% agreement, yeah, as far as I see it. But the other things and his own mental stability, those come into play.
I think he's unstable mentally, because he's had issues for years with his behavior, and he's married four times, I think. And I'm not saying he's the only person who's married four times, but he's got a very unstable life. And I think, honestly, if I could think back, I think his father's death in 1968, when he was like 14 years old, was a thing that affected his whole life, which I can understand, and I think it messed him up. You know, I think people, when they lose someone that important in such a shocking way, it affects your whole life's story. I think sympathy in that regard. You know, I can see that.
No, I think he's been agree. Damaged. You lose a parent, your life changes. And my recently 30 years since my mom passed away, my dad about 3.5 years, I think about them every day. And they affect people in different ways. And you lose a part of you when a parent passes away. There's no question. You have to experience it in order to know. And sometimes those experiences are very negative ones. And so you do have sympathy for him, but...
Yes, and he's 14, and your father shot to death. Don't forget, he didn't die of natural causes. That's one thing. He was violently, assassinated. That's something. How does anybody really ever get over that?
You can't.
Same with the people whose children in these gun shootings. How do you get over it if your kid's been killed in Parkland or at Sandy Hook or in Uvalde or now in Nashville? How do you ever get over it? You don't.
Do you see him really as a true Democrat? Is it really because the family is Democrats? What party should he be in? Or should he be like an independent, you know, libertarian type like I am? Or should he go against the grain and be a Republican? What's the deal with that? He doesn't really sound very much like a Democrat, even an old school Democrat.
I think he doesn't know what he's doing. I think he's mentally deranged. I really think, you know, I don't think he's going to last long. He's not going to get any support. In polls, I'm sure he'll get 1%. He's not going to win any primary against Joe Biden or anybody who runs, who's a serious candidate. He's going on his father's name, and I think he's harming his father's reputation indirectly. I think it's a sad situation, and I know that his mother is mortified, and most of his siblings are. Two-thirds of them disagree with him, and, you know, it's a family issue, but don't forget that the Kennedys have their own warts and their own shortcomings, too. You know, after a couple of them died, you know, tragically, his siblings and all that, it's been a very tragic family in so many ways.
So we do expect him to challenge Joseph Robinette Biden in the Democratic primary, but you don't think he will be on the ballot in November of 24?
Oh, my God, no. Unless he runs as an independent, but I don't think he would have enough support to be a serious independent. I don't think anybody really—I think people are laughing at him saying, oh, come on, you know, get a life.
But we can agree that he may have a D next to his name, but he's not whether a new school or old school Democrat. He's just— kind of an other, which is fine. I'm an other myself, but
seems
a bit, seems a little different. But again, when you're in a Democratic family, same thing with Republicans. The Bushes, I mean, they're fairly moderate, and Jeb Bush, you know, they are certainly very centrist. So that's, you know, a little different. But, you know, with the Kennedys, their legacy, you just always you think of that D next to their name.
Well, the Kennedys have had a much more tragic history than the Bushes, because after all, you know, John F. Kennedy Jr. Died tragically, and John and Robert died, you know, so.
Yeah, the legacy of the family, something that's will be part of American history for a very long time. And it one that's certainly being grappled with by Jr. And understandable. But should he be sitting in the White House, that's another matter, and guess we'll find out more as the 24 election approaches. You wrote early April, Ron, speaking of independents and libertarians and people who switch parties or not quite sure what party they're in, No Labels Independent Group, a disaster in the making. Now, on this list, you mentioned the No Labels Independent Group as an organization forming to provide a potential third-party choice for the next presidential election. There are people in here that you like. Larry Hogan, Republican, former governor of Maryland. Joe Lieberman, I'm not sure if he's Republican,
two,
Democrat.
Yes.
He kind of like Bob Dylan, switching religions back and forth. He kind of switches parties back and forth. But from Connecticut,
I'm not a fan of Pat McCrory. Yeah, I'm not a fan of Pat McCrory or Joe Manchin particularly. But these are named people in fact, Manchin's talked about. It's been rumored he might run as the independent. Oh my God! I don't see him going anywhere. But it's a third choice will only probably help the Republicans or hurt the Democrats. That's what worries me.
Yeah, Manchin being from nearby West Virginia, Democratic senator, and you mentioned you do like Larry Hogan, a very moderate Republican, former governor of Maryland, and I guess you like Joe Lieberman. I certainly admire him
somewhat.
Yeah, well spoken, very smart. He's probably getting up there in years, but who's afraid to switch parties and just adjust his opinions, and I do respect that.
And if you look at the article, 164 electoral votes, and it shows you different states that could end up in a three-way race with the independent winning, and that could be a real match for the Electoral College, as you see in the article.
Do you see memories of, I call him P. Rott or Ross Perot when he was running for president?
Yes.
Another strong independent candidate, John Anderson. Do you see that being a parallel to this? And could it be even more of
More like Perot, because Perot won 19%. Anderson only won about 7%. But I think Perot did actually help to defeat H.W. Bush and put Bill Clinton in the White House in 1992. So, but I'm saying that if you have a three-way race, and if it's independent, whoever it is, I'm not sure who it would be, could actually win 164 electoral votes, it will go to the House of Representatives, and the House has more states with Republican majorities, so that would mean the Republican nominee would win, even if they lost the popular vote. This is a scary situation. Independents don't win elections. They just mess up the works.
So basically, if you vote for a write-in independent minority candidate, you're voting for the eventual winner. And that came up a lot with the Donald Trump and Joe Biden election. I was hardly alone. In fact, I think I was in the majority that I was repulsed by both candidates. So I had to pick the one that I was nauseated by the least. Now, there were independent candidates that I liked, but it's pointless to vote for them because it's essentially a vote for Donald Trump. So I picked the one that I dislike the least, and we know what happened there. And
yeah.
It seems like that happens in politics a lot, Ron. You just vote for the person that you find most tolerable, and that's a shame. But sometimes there are good candidates. Just got a few minutes left here with Dr. Ron Fineman here on The Talking Place. And as hinted around earlier, we've covered 1% of our intended topics, but that's okay. We'll just keep you pining for more. Early in April,
I wanted
Ron,
to bring up the Wisconsin State Supreme Court,
I was going to talk about your April 2nd blog, the Republican Party committing suicide, but we'll table that for next time. Keep people pining for more, or they can also interact with you on social media. But yeah, tell us about the nearby state of Wisconsin and what's going on there.
Yeah, Wisconsin had an election for a state Supreme Court justice, and the progressive candidate won 55% of the vote, and that switches Wisconsin will now be able to stop the gerrymandering of the state, the worst of any state in the country, and also restore abortion rights. Of course, now with the federal judge getting involved, who knows what's going to happen with abortion. But every time there's been a vote of people, they've moved to allow abortion rights to be expanded. So Wisconsin, the state of the original Mr. Progressive Republican Governor and Senator Robert La Follette Sr., it is a big step forward for the left side of the political spectrum.
So you're seeing that as a positive step.
Yes. Well, the guy that lost was also a sore loser. He was condemning the winner instead of being a good loser. The Republicans don't accept defeat anymore. They're always nasty when they lose. That's not good. That's not the American way.
And on that note, we want to thank folks for listening to this program. Hopefully, you learned a few things, had some points to ponder, and most importantly, giggled. At least a couple of times. Ron, we thank you for joining
us
here on The Talking Place.
Yeah.
Remind our listeners how to follow you on social media. You tweet. You don't have mean tweets like Donald Trump. You have nice tweets. So tell us about your tweeting, your Facebooking, and whatever else you do out there in the cyber land.
Well, I'm on Facebook under my name, Ronald Fineman, and the Progressive Professor. And I'm also on Twitter under PolitHist, PolitHist. I, of course, do the progressiveprofessor.com, and I'm also on historynewsnetwork.org under the blog Ronald L. Fineman.
So you are a busy social networker and user of media, and you promise no mean tweets, right? Your tweets are all nice.
Well, usually I post my articles mostly, or I post other things about presidents. I don't really make commentary much on Twitter. Other than my blog entries.
And from time to time, you do contribute to the History News Network. So
yes, actually 196 times I've done it since 2016, which I can't believe in that many articles I've done. And I'm having a new one coming out soon on Barbara Lee, who's running for the Senate in California, who, if she was elected, which I don't think she will be, she would be the oldest first-time elected senator in history at age 78.
You are a prolific publisher of presidentology and politics. So thanks again, Ron,
US
for
Senate, yes.
being
yes,
with
thanks.
Us. It's appreciated as always. And Adam here, thanking you for listening. Please visit our website at WWGH1071.com to hear an encore of this presentation and all of the other 1001 programs that have been voiced by yours truly on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio.